Chinook. It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. In a previous program, Professor Michael Krause of the Alaska Native Language Center has given us a good picture of the history of Native languages, up to the point where bilingual education must now be provided in many schools. But what about learning languages outside the schoolroom? I wanted to know about children who might be interested in learning their native language as a second language. Here's my question.
What if they just want to? Maybe they don't speak it at home. Maybe they're curious and they want to learn the language, or their parents want them to learn the language even though their parents don't speak the language. Is there somebody there to teach them if they just voluntarily want to?
Schools can teach language at the very best. After hundreds of years of teaching tradition, which of course native languages here in Alaska do not have, school teaching tradition, literary tradition, traditions of writing grammars and of teaching second language teachers of French or German or of Latin, as we've had in our civilization for many hundreds of years. And we succeeded in, after 4 years of high school French, in teaching people to say, please pass the salt, very timidly and with a few mistakes and so on, but not to be fluent, good speakers of the language after even 4 years of high school French in a tradition where for centuries there have been people writing grammars and training teachers.
Mm-hmm.
In these areas here. We now have excellent grammars of some of the native languages thanks to the work of some superb linguists associated with us. But we could not expect any more out of these school programs than we could expect out of your Fairbanks French program.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be fraudulent to claim that the schools can now turn around and save the language. They have succeeded in destroying the language, but they can't turn around and save the language. The only thing that can save the spoken language as such is parents who are willing to put their money where their mouth is and speak their own native language to their children, but not turn around and say, oh, now we don't have to worry about the survival of our language because the school will teach our children. Well, mm-hmm. The school will teach a symbolic amount of the language to the children, enough so that they can know something about it, get a feel for it, be proud of it. And when they're 40 years old, they will still know how to participate in the ceremonials and keep the ceremonials alive, because they will know how to pronounce the songs to some extent, and there will still be teachers of the language for the school children, but people will not learn to speak the language fluently. It will simply be a kind of a ceremonial and symbolic thing,
mm-hmm.
which they will have a smattering of, and which native scholars, will be the tradition bearers who will keep it up as a specialized tradition. But the man in the street in Tanana is not going to be speaking Athabaskan unless some very drastic changes take place in the next few years.
So a language does have to be used. It has to be used by the people. It just can't be in a dictionary or a grammar book.
Well, it can be in a dictionary, but it isn't going to be alive by being in a dictionary.
Mm.
And it'll stay forever in a dictionary, which is very important. But it isn't going to be the language of the street in Tanana Village or in Copper Center or even probably the Anaktuvuk Pass, unless very strong changes take place very soon.
Changes that you would like to see? What kind of changes?
I wouldn't be the one to pronounce that. Of course, I can simply tell people, however, that if you cease to speak your language to your children, there's no way they're going to speak it to theirs. And you should be aware of this and not take it for granted that your language will live forever, because just look at the next community down the river where, in fact, the language is no longer there. places in Alaska where now there's nobody under 30 or even 40 who can speak the language.
Do you think that the desire to speak the languages is coming back now with the sort of rekindling of civil rights with the Native Claims Act?
The desire seems to just about always come back as soon as it's too late. The extinction is forever, and one thing is that at least as we continue our work, there will certainly be dictionaries and grammars and a memory or a record of these mm-hmm. languages. But to keep the languages alive is a different matter, and it requires not just scientific work and spiritual work, but political work and educational work. There's another big thing looming on the horizon now as part of the Alaska Native language scene. Up to now, we've been talking about schools and the conversion of the great cowboy and Indians movie into what now has in the history of the winning of the West and the Western expansion of the American civilization in North America, that they shifted from the cowboy and Indians to teacher and pupil. The battle is no longer on horses and so on, it's in the schoolroom. Or I've been describing it as being in the schoolroom, where the schools have been responsible more than anything mm-hmm. else for changing the picture of Indian life, Native life in North America. There is another big issue now. The battleground is shifting even from the schoolroom into the living room. Every living room will soon have that box with that screen. And we're sitting right here on the public media, electronic media, broadcasting over the airwaves without benefit of school teacher or benefit of book or schoolroom or anything else, just the airwaves influencing people in English.
I see what you're getting at.
And as soon as you plant that black box or that box in the corner of the living room with maybe piping in five color channels through and into every Alaskan village, thanks to satellites, that if Native culture is not included in that box, the box is a regular time bomb sitting in your in everybody's living room, a cultural time bomb. That is, it's only be a matter of time until it succeeds in eroding what is left of Native culture. I think that if the media do not become self-aware of the effect they are having, not just in bringing I Love Lucy or Gangbusters or whatever into the every home, but in having some responsibility. Because they certainly have the influence. Do they have the responsibility? Are they able to see what they're doing? And can the Native people, in fact, rise to the challenge and join in the battle of the living room? Can they control their own living room?
Mm-hmm.
They're beginning to control their own school, but can they control their own living room? And the media is a challenge there.
What you have us do then is to have a program and have what you just said translated into the various languages.
Not necessarily. I mean, there's no practical way, for instance, yeah. that this program could be translated into 15 different
That's
languages
probably.
And broadcast in every particular direction. But it's a question of being conscious of this and doing something about it. I'm not saying that every program should be translated into every Native language and somehow beamed to the right home. Only that the media do have to, the media people and the people who care, I would hope the Native people themselves, mm-hmm. care about their own cultural future, get together and do all kinds of things that could be done about using the media for the furtherance and enrichment of Native language and culture rather than its destruction.
I hate to let you go on such a frightening note. What you've been saying saying is a little bit gloomy.
It doesn't have to be, and especially since we're sitting here in the media, the challenge in some ways is not as technically as great, because the radio and TV can broadcast native languages just as readily as they can broadcast English. It makes no difference whatever to those
tubes
or
no.
transistors to what language is going over, whereas printing presses and literacy programs and alphabets and literatures and so on, it takes a long while to develop a viable literature, but to develop a radio programs and TV programs in native languages can be done with no technical problems that stem from the medium itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just doing it.
It's just doing it.
Professor Michael Krause of the Alaska Native Language Center at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. I'm Paula Schiller, and you've been listening to Chinook Patterns. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profile, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles, and welcome to a Festival of Native Arts sampler. I'm Paula Schiller, and I'll be taking you on a quick tour of some of the festival performances. The Festival of Native Arts is entirely the work of the Native students at the University of Alaska. It began March 12th with Aleut Night, followed by Yupik, Athabaskan, and Inupiaq Nights, and finishing up on Friday with Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian Nights. We're offering you a front row seat for this sampler of story and song because that's exactly where we were with our tape recorder, so you'll hear the audience as well as the performers. The festival began with the Aleut singers giving a concert of church music in English, Aleut, and Slavonic. We'll hear them now singing in Aleut. Performing on Monday night was a group of Native students called the Tuma Theater. Tuma in Yupik means the way, path, or trail. Here they tell a Yupik story from the village of Eek.
A long time ago, a bird called Upanak was flying around, having a good time. Then he thought to himself, It's such a nice day. Maybe I'll just close my eyes and soar up into the air and fly and then dive. Then Kupanak started flying up and down, just having a good time singing and laughing. Upana, upana, mayu. He heard someone calling his name. So he opened his eyes and looked around. Kupanak said to himself, "It couldn't be someone. There is no one around. Maybe I'm just hearing things. Well, I'll just keep on having fun." He closed his eyes and started to sing. Upana, upana, mayuhana, someone calling him. In the big tune, in the big tune, up and on the sea, up and out of love, down to Naka Sakura, ugly, mother, Nakali. He opened his eyes and looked around, but saw no one. "If I keep one eye open, I'll see who has been calling me," Kupanak thought to himself. And he flew up into the clear blue sky. This time he kept one eye open, scanning the horizon and the land. Kupanak was singing louder than ever. Kupanak! From a pond, a loon surfaced from where he had been hiding. The loon looked straight up at Kupanak and started to sing.
In the big doom, in the big doom, Kupanak, the sea, Kupanak, the blood, down to the castle, down to the mountain, not the leaf.
Seeing this, Kupanak screamed at the loon at the top of his voice. "It was you all this time. I least expected you, loon. You know better than to call others' names. It is wrong to call others' names." Kupanak, angry at the loon, flew off toward the blazing sun and slowly disappeared. During that time, the loon watched motionless, ashamed of what he did to his friend Kupanak. He was about to dive when he noticed his long gaze toward the sun had turned his eyes and throat red. That is why to this day all loons have red throats and eyes to remind them that they should never call others' names.
Wednesday night was Athabaskan night. The interior villages were well represented, and in fact this song, called Goodbye Sunny, was performed twice. We'll hear it now by the dance team from Nulato and Caltag.
Thank you.
now return to the Tuma Theater and an Inupiaq story called Mighty Mouse.
Once, a very long time ago, there lived a mouse out in the country. After a very good night's sleep, he got up from the bed and started stretching himself up and down. Every time he put his arms up, he would touch the sky. He touched it several times. Finally, he said to himself, maybe if I cut down the pole, the sky would fall down and the people would think I am the greatest mouse there is in the whole wide. So he started chewing on the pole that kept the sky up. He chewed and chewed. When the pole started swaying, he pushed the pole and ran to move out of the way. When he got quite a way away from the pool, he looked back. A leaf lay fallen on the ground, not the sky. Then he noticed he was near a lake. He thought to himself, if I can this great big lake, surely the people will think I am the greatest. So he started to swim the lake until he reached the other side. When he got out of the water, he shook himself and looked back. From this angle, the lake looked no more than a footprint of a human being. Then he noticed the mountain and thought to himself, if I move this mountain, I shall be the greatest mouse in the whole wide world. So he started to dig and dig underneath the mountain until it was all cleared. It began to move. Step by step, he moved the mountain until at last he reached and shoved it into the ocean. There it still remains, known to people as Little Diomede Island.
From the Festival of Native Arts, I'm Paula Schiller. You've been listening to Chinook Profiles, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.